So the topic of the talk tonight has to do with the Mahayana Buddhism, or the great vehicle, or the vehicle that goes beyond just trying to help yourself and make yourself feel better and be peaceful, all of those things. Not that those are something we shouldn't do, but they're in the Soto tradition, Soto Zen lineage of Japan, and also many Mahayana traditions or great vehicle traditions. There's the tradition of the Bodhisattva, or the enlightening being, as Thomas Cleary has translated Bodhisattva, enlightening being. So these are people who have studied the Buddha's teaching and have begun to awaken, have come to a point where they're starting to see more and more and more that everything is dependently arisen, that nothing comes from its own side as some kind of independent self or entity or ego. And when a person, through studying the teachings, through practicing meditation, through doing awareness practices of various sorts, depending on the tradition, just like the sutra that we chanted this evening is part of that practice, we begin to see that we're really not separate from everything. We begin to see that on some level, and each person sees this in their own way, depending on the particular karma that they come into this life with. So the title or the topic is Leave the Vow. So there's 16 vows in the Soto tradition that one receives, observes. You can either do this informally, just read them and observe them. Or if you want more Velcro glue, then you can take them formally with a preceptor or a teacher. And this is just making a formal statement that I am going to do this. I'm going to do this. You can do this on your own. Might be a little harder. Or not, I don't know. Only you would know. You should trust yourself. I'm not here to sell you on taking vows or receiving precepts, jukai, as it's called in our tradition. But I am here to say that with the topic or the title, Lead with a Vow, the vow we're talking about here is, there's 16 of them, but the one that we're specifically addressing that I want to talk about this evening is the third of the three pure precepts, which are simply put, do good, don't do harm, and save all beings. Save all beings. I like to say it this way, be with all things. Be with all things. So if you lead your life, if you actually begin to understand what it means to fundamentally not object to anything, not agree with anything, nor look away from anything. Those are the three poisons. Those are the three ways we avoid our life and live in some kind of separate identity that actually is ignoring your life. You're actually ignoring the very life that is being presented to you, that was presented to you at the very time you, your spirit entered this particular human form. The way of talking. Nothing entered anything, probably. So what we are being encouraged to do is to, rather than live our life by in a way of getting away from something, avoiding things, not that we shouldn't get out of the way of a truck. It'd be silly to go out and say, I'm going to meet everything exactly where it's at. Wham! Well, probably wouldn't have too many lifetimes. As Trungpa Rinpoche once said, someone who's awake or is awakening is not crazy. Otherwise, we would need what he referred to as an enlightenment ward. Lock everybody, all the people who are so enlightened that they no longer have a brain. So it's, again, like the Buddhist teachings, it's the middle way, not too tight, not too loose. We see it, we have a sense of a natural sense of equanimity or balance that sees just how tight we should tighten things, just how loose we should loosen things, that is based on what? awareness. Excuse me, if with our awareness we see what is fundamentally happening around us, then we have an idea of where we should maybe help something up or tamp something down, or maybe not be too concerned about something that's spinning in circles over here. Not get ourselves embroiled in some kind of a little story that's going on that really is probably burning itself out anyway. So leading with the vow is saying that I'm going to be with, I'm going to observe a vow where I am going to do my best to be with everything that arises, be with everything that comes towards me, be with everything that arises within me. That's can be difficult because if what is arising within you is extremely, a lot of anxiety or a lot of fear, difficult to know how to do that. The natural feeling or instinct is to want to get rid of that, to want to anesthetize ourselves in some way. Or the other way is to make up a bunch of reasons why that's going on, why blame someone, blame ourselves, blame the government, blame our practice, blame our meditation teacher. And you know, it's not that some of the things aren't, if we're not ruling out a relative truth, it's not that some things, this isn't causing that, it's causing that, and this is pushing on that, and that's leaning on this, and there's 15 dominoes in a row here, but then the dominoes start, and then it starts to turn into oranges, which are rolling down the hill. You know, just a way of saying that things go, you can't really find a trajectory that you can count on. There's so many of them. The rivers are flowing in the darkness, as it says in Sandokai. But what we can do is we can observe that vow. We can use that vow, that fundamental commitment that we're making to ourselves, not necessarily making it to the Buddha or to the teacher or to the lineage necessarily. That may have something to do with it, but basically you're committing to your own Buddha nature. You're committing to your own sanity. You're going to actually awaken yourself. No one's going to come along and tap you on the shoulder and wake you up necessarily. You're going to do it yourself. And the way in this tradition, the way we do that is we spend a lot of time looking at that which thinks it's a self. Hold very still. This teaching has been going on for centuries. Hold very still and watch what continues to jump up, lay down, move around, hide out. Just watch it. Just observe it. You gotta take a good lesson from a cat watching a mouse. I have a 19-year-old cat that has really terrible arthritis. He can hardly get around. He's aching all the time. He's got it. Whines and complains and blames us for everything. But you don't want to be a mouse in our house. Because if you're a mouse, and he knows he holds perfectly still, and a mouse comes out from underneath the stove and walks, you know, what's that big furry ball there? It's not doing anything. An arthritic cat. The last 3 months, he's caught 4 mice. He just got too close to that. And that's all he does. He didn't chase them. He just waits till they get close to him and then he snags them. So what we could do is, might say, take a lesson from that. Just observe what is happening. You'll know when you need to reach out and snag something and when you don't. You know, you'll know, not that image, of course, only goes so far, but it's the idea of just observing something, watching it for a long time. And you might notice if you watch something for a long time, especially if it's something you think is solid and real and is your emotions or your story about yourself or about others, it really doesn't last very long. You don't do anything with it. Even if it's something that someone did to you when you have proof that they disturbed you or took advantage of you or disrespected you or whatever. If you do nothing with it, it actually dissolves. It actually doesn't, you need to fuel that. In order to have a war, you have to have ammunition. in order to have a war, you have to have maps and charts and all that stuff. So if you're leading your life, you could say with your awareness, or out of a vow, out of a vow to be with things, then what you notice through the awareness is the way in which you can't quite be with things. The way with which something happens and you object to it. Something else happens and you agree with it. You want that. This other thing you don't want. And then there's things that arise that are just like, who cares? So whereas vowing to be with all things is basically saying that you're going to look very closely at everything that's happening all the time without accepting it, rejecting it, or looking away. And that includes if you're looking at something and the accepting or maybe the rejecting comes kind of spontaneously out of left field, boom, suddenly you find yourself just being aggressive. That also has to be watched. This is where the no self situation starts to show up. And the way in which it shows up is by seeing this very carefully, you really see that there was no one behind that aggression. There was no solid being there. To see that is just an astonishing situation that there's no way you can share it with anybody other than what I'm doing here, which is just a series of words and concepts. To actually see that your own passion, aggression, ignorance, your own three poisons are without an entity or a person behind them. I'm not saying there isn't what I like to call discontinuous identity happening all over the place. It's like the cars going down the road. But like when I was very young, well, we used to play a game called Changing the Driver. Someone's driving the car, it's 1948 DeSoto. Someone's driving the car and the driver says, see you later, goes out the window, climbs up on the roof. The person next to it takes the wheel, and then they say, see you later. They go out and they come in the other window. You can usually do that. You need about three people to keep from getting a wreck. That's a lie, that never happened. So it's discontinuous. I had you, didn't I? Actually, someone else told me that story. No, they didn't. So it has to be done through observation. And so all the vow isn't like some kind of you can't break a precept. You also can't keep the precept. They're only to be observed. My Zen master, Koban Shina Roshi, when I first asked him if I could take the precepts with him some 25 years ago or 22 years ago, so he was a very cheerful, very sweet fellow, but not with me. He said, you don't take precepts, you observe them. So I felt very embarrassed over that because I thought I was doing quite well after meditating for 20 years. Interesting distinction to actually observe that. So you actually, I vow to be with all things, and then the way you work with that is you observe through your awareness practice. You can't quite do that. Okay, but if you do that, then your self-centeredness really starts to show up. But then at the same time that's happening, if there's a strong awareness practice, then also the instability of that self that is so self-centered starts to show up also at the same time, like it's wavering. There's something there that is just fishy. You know what I mean? Fishy. Something doesn't smell right there. And with each person who would officially receive precepts, or the what we call jukai, or receiving precepts, would handle this totally differently. You can never say to someone else, well, you're breaking the precept. If you do say that, then you actually are breaking the precept yourself. Which, of course, I can't say, because then I would be kind of like an Escher painting. Lots of stir stuffs. Okay.
You say that you can't look at someone else and know if they're breaking the precept. Does that individual who took the precepts, is there something, is there a way that they know if they're breaking the precept?
You know, what they're going to know, or what they're going to understand, is that they're not, maybe not clear about it. So it's a lack of clarity that seems to be what happens. I mean, you know, if you have lots of precepts, and I'm just concentrating on this one right now, is be with all things. That's the, as has been said, that's the vow that transcends karma. Because you actually, what is happening right now, you're breathing, your bodily fluids, your body motion, your thought patterns that are rising spontaneously, that is your karma. If you want to know where what your past life was, look at the body, because that it came out of another situation. And if you want to know, as has been said, I'm not the first one to say this, if you want to know what your future life will be like, then look at your mind, because that's where you're headed. So the idea of transcending that, going beyond that, would be to do nothing. That only do something in terms of the causes and conditions that are spontaneously arising around you, which would appear as someone needs your help, you help them. Someone else may look like they need your help, but you don't really have permission, so you don't help them. You have to have a lot of clarity to be able to see that, to understand that you, because if you're moving there out of your own self-centeredness of wanting to be a person who's helpful, then that's not so helpful. Because that's more about you than what you're actually doing. And when you start to function that way, then, well, I don't need to explain it too much. Then we're kind of wrapped up in evaluating our own activity relative to a world that we aren't really looking at very closely. The assumption is made, something's wrong out here, now what should I do about it? Rather than, what is that? What is that? Actually listen to the tone of someone's voice when they talk, listen to the words, actually be with all things, meet them exactly where they are, which part of the awareness practice is seeing. It's very hard to do. It's extremely hard to sit and be with somebody who is really confused. It's not very entertaining. It's generally just cranking up a lot of crap about their life or complaining or whatever, just to be with them. But one of the ways you can do that is to start with yourself. Sit down and practice being with yourself. If you can be with this, if you can be with the quality of coming and going, the intense energy of, I don't like it, I like it, I should, I shouldn't, I can't do this, I can't handle this anymore. If you can find a way to just be with yourself, and as Trungpa Rinpoche said, my Tibetan teacher said, make friends with yourself. You can't make friends with something unless you've actually sat down with that situation and worked with the quality of craziness, or the quality of being, feeling like you're your very own enemy. It takes time. And I'm not saying there aren't other ways of doing it, but this is the way we do it. We sit down and we see the way in which we can't quite see it. That's also awareness. Awareness that you're not aware is awareness. Most people, when I say most people, all those guys down the road are not aware that they're not aware. They're not aware. Their awareness is totally laminated, stuck to their thought patterns. They don't really realize that thinking and awareness are not, you know, can actually function differently. Yes. Jason.
You started saying if you can be with the intense coming and going in yourself, And then you didn't.
Then you can be with the intents coming and going that's in front of you. I'm a little absent-minded, so I appreciate any help I can get. If you practice on this, then when you get up off your cushion and go into your rest of your life and you're meeting the raw edges of things, which is generally other people and their difficulty or their complaints or just talking about their life. You know, it's difficult to listen to someone that you really feel an affinity with, but maybe you're even related to them, but you really don't have permission. Really, really don't have permission. It's not that they haven't even said to you, but you can sense that that's not exactly, you really need someone to show you that they're ready to have the kind of help that you're ready to provide to them. And that help may be no more than just sitting down and listening to them. So by working with yourself and your own negativity, then when you've done that, you work on that and you're willing to return to that and see the way you can't quite be with all things. You can't quite, your own thought patterns, you don't like them. You don't have to like them. You don't even have to be with them. But if you receive that vow, or if you're observing that vow, that's a good place to start. See the way you keep objecting to your own mind. And if you're always doing that, then it's very difficult to step out into Starbucks or the parking lot, for that matter, or any place, and actually be with whoever or whatever approaches you. The next time you spill a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or something like that, an accident, you knock it off the table. Watch what your mind does as that occurs. Watch what arises in the mind about that. See if you're able to just meet it. Just be with that. Or if you right away have an expletive. They call swearing expletives. So if you have an expletive, especially directed towards the cup. Good. Or the counter. Or your mate who didn't clean that off or set that too close to the edge. Here's the amazing thing about it. It's not about stopping doing that. That's sometimes misunderstood, is because that's more about being better, getting better, being a person who never does that. It's still about ego. But if it's just seeing, just witness it, just see the way in which you jump the gun and into some kind of blaming. Now, don't blame the blamer. Don't do the what's called sometimes called double negativity. The first negativity is just for awareness purposes. But then the second negativity is, I shouldn't do that. Why do I always do that? Do you have any idea why I do that all the time? Why am I doing that? Or, there I go again. What's the word?
Dodo.
Dodo. I love those Sanskrit words. But then, I think it's Oscar. No, isn't it? Oh no. What was the time I said, made some statement and Senshi was there and I can't remember what the statement was, but I remember you saying, oh no. we've been quoting you ever since. Very funny. Yeah. So, always about awareness, never about accomplishing anything, about accomplishing the vow. What happens as we proceed to observe that vow, we eventually see over time through awareness, we actually begin to see that we're not separate. We're not a separate being from everything else that is arising and passing away. And there's a sense of freedom, even a sense of exhilaration. This doesn't mean you're going to have a smiley face happening all the time, no matter what you do. You know, and you may not have that at all. You may be rather a sad sack. Yes.
Question from Sandru in New York.
couple of questions, actually. Isn't it easier to relate to this approach when we think about ugly feelings? Anger and pain, I like them to be transient, but being in love is like diamonds, right? Forever.
No, no, Sandro. He's got another question there. I'll wait for that one.
Being with all things means recognizing you're already with them without doing something?
I think that is more of a fruition quality rather than path. So if we jump to fruition before we've actually walked the path, what happens? We start to cling to concepts of fruition. I'm really doing well. That's what, like when some people will say, well, we're all one. Well, we're not all one. And so it seems to be necessary to actually be with and acknowledge, but just by observing it, the negativity that arises and falls. And if you do anything with the negativity, it fluffs up or puffs up a self that is having that particular negative experience or positive experience. So when it comes to something like love, you know, that's another topic. So, and there's the grasping kind of love that quite often can create a lot of jealousy, which is actually it's just an extreme form of grasping or passion. But the kind of love that transcends all that, that is the vow. There's just no person behind it. So usually, as Sandra's pointing out, and he's correct, that we generally work more with negative things that we can see we're trying to push those away. Whereas when positive feelings come, we're more kind of grasping onto those, and how can we have more of those, and how, you know, we want to have those good feelings. And sometimes some people even teach meditation as if you're not having good feelings, you're not meditating right. Or, you know, why would you meditate if it sucks? It's just a complete misunderstanding. Not wrong, because there's meditation practices that are just sitting down, and mindfulness practice. Jon Kabat-Zinn is one of the teachers of that particular way of working with meditation. And some people aren't ready to do this particular kind of meditation because it's they're just not ready for that. However, a kind of meditation that where you sit down and you just settle down and just watch your senses and scan your body and something like that could be rather soothing, unless you're having really deep anxiety, and it might not work so well. Further questions about this? I also have a question from Maria Bardoska. I was gonna try to address her question. She's in Toronto. Yeah, Shoka.
What is that sense of loving people that you come into contact with?
What is that sense of? It means you love people you come in contact. And
it seems.
I don't know what your question is.
It seems like there's. I don't know if it's love, but it's like if I meet someone, or even if I'm just in the vicinity of someone and I see them, there's a sense of having a deep love for them.
Well, that's probably love.
Is that a relative love?
Everything is relative. Everything's relative. Let me say it in a higher pitched voice.
Sure.
Yeah. Everything's relative.
You can't have something that's not related to everything else. It's relative. Absolute, to use the relative word, for it is nothing is separate. So what you're talking about, my understanding of it would be that everyone has a different quality, of being feeling affection or caring about someone, maybe not even sure why. Sometimes we meet someone that we've never met before, and we have an immediate affinity for them. We like them a lot, or we love them, care about them. other people may not feel something is happening there that just doesn't feel so good. So there's all kinds of variations in that.
Yes. In your meditation instruction, you said, you know, when you're in the sense of sight, go to the sense of sound. What moves?
Yes.
What moves?
I asked a question.
And I don't know.
It's probably nothing moves as far as a thing, but there's a movement in that we change objects. Well, but fundamentally, probably nothing's actually moving. You could say if there's a, you know, there's a kind of movement that registers in our three-dimensional world here that is happening in our mind. So like when we dream, and what's moving in our dream? It's like, it's unreal. It's real because we think it's so real, but we wake up from it. So it's very much like when you're moving from the sense of seeing to the sense of touch to the sense of sound. It's unreal. Really, you're in all those places at once. You're just moving your attention from one to the other. So you could say you moved your attention, but I wouldn't go too far with it.
Where does movement have anything to do with contrast?
I think so.
So contrast is still relative?
It is. Movement is relative. Sheldon.
Isn't everything always moving?
I don't know. Is it?
Pretty sure it is.
Pretty sure it is? Yeah. All right. I'm with you guys.
That's what Einstein says.
I'm with you guys.
He does say that.
They said that on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
I'm with you guys. I'm with you boys. That's it.
Boys.
I'm with you boys. So perhaps Maria's, you could read Maria's, has quite a long question, but I'll at least address it. I don't know if I can answer it. It's a little. You have it. Maria, if she doesn't have it, it's her fault. Maria Bardoska. Well, basically, I don't remember the question specifically, but she was asking about intense, of really difficult feelings. And then there were really, and I don't remember her words exactly, and you could send that again and I can talk about it maybe next week or Sunday or something. But there was a combination that she was expressing about the negativity that's happening there, but also this negativity. And then there's kind of a, I think the word she used when she went down into that, there was kind of a sweetness that was there also. And I remember that. And this is a way not to or non-duality starts to show its starts to come over the horizon. We begin to see that the separation between negative feelings or painful feelings and pleasurable feelings, they're not as separate as we don't. They're not two opposite things. And so. You know, I'm not sure if I don't have the entire question there, but it's something like that. And my recommendation there is just stay with it and just go down. If it gets, if it's extremely painful, this is not about torturing ourselves. So if it's painful, go take a walk. But then at some point, come back and look again and allow yourself to go down in that. And I think she mentioned the word longing also. The longing is an interesting word, more about a desire for something that's not about an object necessarily. It's not about wanting something. It's like it's a strong emotion. It's more like love, maybe. But it's a kind of a love that isn't grasping. It's a love that lets something be what it is. And it's the beginning of no separation. It's the beginning of compassion, of feeling with. Hard to see that. hard for us to see that. Yeah, good question.
On the way over here, listening to the news, and all these problems happening in Israel and Palestine right now.
Yes.
How can we be with something so negative as that?
Well, you're here and you were listening to it. Just don't do anything with it other than what naturally arises. What's naturally, if I watch that, what naturally arises, I can't even repeat here. Because I don't swear very much. But I get really upset about that. But I don't have any problem with getting, I'm not trying not to get upset. I'm not trying to get upset. I'm just trying to be with whatever that is. And that may involve being irritated by it, by people killing other people with some kind of political justification that is distasteful to hear about. It's distasteful to hear that human beings are so attached to their agenda and their idea of right and wrong and blaming, that they're willing to actually inflict great suffering on others. But it's been going on for a long time. That's no justification for it. But you're asking, how can we be with that? You're probably already doing it. I would just say, awareness is king or queen. Awareness is the most important thing about anything you would do or not do, is the awareness within which any particular situation, event, thought pattern, emotion, memory, imagination, or actual event arises. Make sure, when I say make sure by strengthening the awareness, so that what does arise doesn't arise in a closet with no light. Wait. If it arises in an open field, if it arises, you use an image, if it arises with a lot of openness, if your heart, if your mind is more like an open field, then there's plenty of room. It's like Suzuki Roshi says in his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, I have to paraphrase it, but it's like your mind is like a cow. And he says, have an open mind, have a big field so your cow can just wander around and at some point lay down and take a nap. Sounds like a Zen guy, doesn't it? So now go ahead.
How do you relate that then to relieving suffering?
So it's necessary to meet everything where it's at. Because if you try to do it based on your idea of right and wrong, you probably will start punishing some people in order to get them to stop mistreating others, or based on your ideas about it. If we function out of our presumptions, out of our preconceptions, out of our projections about everything else out there, then quite often we tend to continue that. Then we get somebody that doesn't like what we're doing about it and they fight us. The example I sometimes use, the visual one, to if you stop the war here, then you're probably not going to add too much to the war out there. I'm not saying you'll solve it. I'm not saying that just because of what you do, it will end it, but maybe. So the first thing to do is to observe the way you're at war with yourself, rather than look out in the world and blame. Look at the way that you have this warfare going on. And the image I use is if you can reduce the tendency to want to win this war in yourself, then it's almost like one of these fists just stops. The other one keeps going just out of momentum. So we still feel like we're at war. Then we notice there's really no enemy. There's just this intense situation going on. Just an image. It's just a way of talking about it. Bam, bam, bam. We go to someone, how can I do this? So we might put alcohol on it, or we might put Prozac on it, or we might hook ourselves up to 110. Don't do that. We might, I mean, so many ways we might get some kind of therapy. We might, and you know, you might meet someone who's a therapist. They don't have to be a Buddhist. You might just meet someone who, because their frequency and yours are very similar, they might be able to fundamentally help you. Buddhism doesn't have any corner on being savior. But it seems to be that seeing that warfare inside is at least we're moving at something. We're actually doing it. We're seeing the warfare, but we're not going to go to war with that. We're not going to add another fist in there to try to stop this. It takes a lot of insight or even guts maybe to do that, because that means you're just letting a war happen inside. That doesn't seem very, does that seem right? I mean, maybe you should talk to your meditation teacher.
Questions from Chikmay, Ian, and Sandra. So from Chikmay and Traverse City, he says, I expect to progress along the path through training the mind. Is this a wrong view?
No. Next question.
From Ian. Isn't it important to also acknowledge my accomplishments with self-praise? Also, if I don't account for my suffering by seeing what harm I'm doing, I don't learn. So how is it helpful to only see and be with my thoughts and not doing something with them?
What's the first question?
Isn't it important to also acknowledge my accomplishments with self-praise?
A little bit. Not too tight, not too loose. And I'm saying don't do it, but a little bit. Sure, you can acknowledge, oh, this is, seems to be working a little better. I didn't swear at my coffee cup. Good job. So, and I don't mean to be silly about it, but I'm saying, you know, you could acknowledge that, yeah, there's I'm doing that less. So I think it's more about praising than, which tends to develop into some kind of image of someone who never does anything wrong. It might be good to just acknowledge it, just see that you're, you know, you are doing a little bit less. The issue, the problem with that is the causes and conditions that arise as any particular being, you're 28 years old, 36 years old, 42, 99 years old, you don't know what kind of emotional tsunami is going to develop in terms of your own personal karma. You don't know. There's no way you can know. So therefore, if you start to set up some kind of structure where I'm doing really good, I'm doing getting better, I see I'm doing less and less and less, praise, 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 then it doesn't prepare you, you could say, and it makes it more upsetting when suddenly your whole mind goes back in the toilet again, because it may. The only thing that seems to be helpful there is really, really strong awareness. So that you're ready to what? I mean, everything where it's at, including your own negativity. So if you're praising yourself, then we're creating some kind of a accomplishment mentality. And accomplishment mentalities are tend to not have a lot of awareness around them, because they're like little merit badges. Yeah. So I said a little bit of that. You personally may need some of that, but I wouldn't do too much. What was the second part of the question?
If I don't account for my suffering by seeing what harm I'm doing, I don't learn. So how is it helpful to only see and be with my thoughts and not doing something with them?
Well, fundamentally, it's Ian.
Yes.
But fundamentally, you can't really do anything with your thoughts. And you notice, we wouldn't even be meditating if we could just control our thoughts. We wouldn't do any of this. We would just control our thoughts. We wouldn't have any problems. So the idea is not to go overboard and just not do anything with anything and just be kind of a loose cannon, you know, and just, I have to be me, or I have to be with all things. So bring all the terrible stuff. So this is why Buddhism is called the middle way, not too tight, not too loose, even with that a little bit. But quite often we go overboard with that and we try to squeeze some kind of control out of things. So that was the last part of that question.
So how is it helpful to only see and be with my thoughts and not doing something with them.
The way it's helpful is if you actually do it rather than have a concept about it. If you actually do that, you will not know what it is. If you know what it is, you're still operating out of a concept. It's like chewing on a recipe. You will not, you'll still be hungry.
Another question from Sandra.
Unless, of course, it's a recipe, it falls. In case, probably can get some nourishment out of that.
Ready?
I hope so.
Is there an analogy between the good thing? And then colon, I'm in love and I'm not going to get caught up in the story. We usually try for that. And being angry slash hurt, and then I try to squash that fundamental response. But the first approach, see it. Love or hurt is less delusional. That is, just because I revel in the good stuff, noticing that doesn't have a basic difference from noticing the ugly stuff, so long as I see the story I try to impose on both.
Who asked that question?
That's Simon.
Darn psychiatrists. Yeah, read it again.
Okay. So he asks, is there an analogy between the good thing, and then colon, I'm in love and I'm not going to get caught up in the story. We usually try for that. And being angry, hurt, and then I try to squash that fundamental response. But the first approach, see it. Love or hurt is less delusional.
Delusion is delusion is delusion. So until there's fundamental awakening at the basis of consciousness, which is to see there is no solid being, this does not end the love. It doesn't end anything. All that is still happening. It's just not real. Just like the example I always use is a dream. It's, while it's happening, it's real. Or this is why we like to watch, horror movies, adventure movies or something, or movies about love, because we actually can kind of resonate with that. It's, we know it's imaginary, but still it touches that area where we, especially if someone tells a story in such a way that they're very good, where we forget we're in a room, we forget we're on the couch, we forget we're watching a movie, and we're really absorbed by it. So we usually call that a really good movie. It's because it really magnetizes us moves our emotions in such a way that other things don't. So, but the idea of trying, of being in love and trying not to get caught up in it. So, I don't know, good luck. If you're in love, you're not going to say so about that.
Just go along with the ride.
You don't even have to do that.
Yes. Question from Shane.
Yes, Shane.
Can you talk about what makes the what question such a powerful tool or form to work with your mind?
I can. So I often say, ask what questions, not why questions, because why questions, this is something I've been over before, why questions are circular. You say why, and you'll get an answer of because. It'll be some kind of it, because of this, because of that. Why is this, because of that? Why? But why is that, because of this? Well, why is that? Well, because of this, this, and this all got together on Tuesday, and that's what happened. Well, why Tuesday? You know, it's endless. It's called samsara, the constant wheel of life and death. This is just a little form, and if you can see that it happens in the little form, this is what is happening. This is why the planets go around each other. Circular, this physical world. But when you say what, you say what, nothing happens, except you see what's in front of you. It doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't stop. And the awareness, if the awareness is being given some priority, which means you're not trying to figure it out, you're just looking at what it is, its color, its texture, its shape, its smell, its density, its heat. You're just looking at that, you're just aware of that. The reason that's so powerful is that takes you down into it. And so you can see what it is. And you want me to tell you what it is that you discover if you do this enough? Not separate. You're not separate from anything you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, feel, think. Anything, you're not separate from it. To see that actually ends the struggle. And this isn't to say you're not going to have struggles, or difficulties with this, that, or paying your bills, or figuring out how to get the roof painted. But it does mean that something has come to rest. The frantic quality, the way we sometimes live our life. You actually have a willingness to just be genuine, be who you are, be ordinary, be simple. And if someone needs your help, someone else says, no thanks, you respect that. It's very, very simple. Anyone else? Anyone here? Michael?
So we're not separate from all this suffering going on.
Not separate from anything. Fundamentally, that has to be seen. It's not called oneness. It's called not separate. We use relative terms. Yes, you're not separate from that. You're not separate from the people who are causing that. You're not separate from the most horrible person who's ever lived. Separate.
So wishing that it was different is taking a position then?
Wishing that it was different is taking a position, but being aware that you're wishing that it was different is awareness. You don't have to succeed in anything. Don't have to actually succeed, but you may succeed just because the self-centeredness with which you were trying to control your life has started to fade out and give way. So the self-centeredness is not as strong. Self-centeredness needs to be fueled by what? Passion, aggression, ignorance. And those get more and more subtle as we go along. Pushing, pulling, shutting down. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're beginning to see as meditators. When we hold still, we see the way we push, we see the way we pull, we see the way we shut down, and we don't do anything about it.
And is that how you relieve suffering?
Yeah. That is. Keep coming, you got more questions, or I can see it on your face. Yes. Go ahead.
Is the place that the suffering is relieved, is that in yourself?
Of course. Everywhere.
But then? When I look out again, there is still this massive suffering going on.
Well, then go back into samsara with your hammers and tongs and try to fix everything. If you want, I mean, do that if you want. I mean, you might have to do that for 15 or 20 more lifetimes before you actually come back to a place where we're saying, sit down and just look. And then if you need to get up, if 15 people all sit down and just look, and then at some point, different people might get up and move to Australia or go out and build life rafts. Somebody else might move to Palestine. There's no right or wrong to anything. Someone else might join the Peace Corps. I don't think that's a particularly good idea, but I don't know that. I don't know that. Somebody may be exactly what they need to do. But if they do that out of awareness, they won't even check with me. You won't say, I wonder what Sokathon thinks. If you wonder what Sokathon thinks, I'll tell you right now what he thinks. Don't do it. Don't do anything unless you have to. And if you have to do it, you aren't going to check with me. If you have doubts about it, you aren't going to check with anybody, really. Anything else?
Yes. From Chikmay.
Yes.
If all things are a projection of mind, is this true for the Buddha's teaching?
Yes.
And um, shame? How do we work the tendency to try to answer the what questions?
Well, there's nothing wrong with trying to answer what questions as long as you keep saying what. But as soon as you say why, you're going to get really dizzy. Ooh, why because. It's like a Ferris wheel. Anything else? Sure, go.
If we have to do something in such a way where we don't have to check in with anybody, how does that relate to a teacher or being a student?
Well, if you're functioning as a student of mine, which you are, then you should check in as long as you have to. And when you don't have to anymore, you'll know it. But I have a feeling that's probably going to be a little while. That's merely a description, not a criticism. But that's a valid question. I mean, how does that all work? I don't often tell people what to do once in a while. You don't have to. People are always telling themselves what to do. More.
If we're checking in with you, does that mean that we're doubting?
It doesn't matter whether you're doubting. All of those positions don't matter. It's just awareness. I doubt. Wait a minute. He just said he doubts. Or you could say, I doubt that. I can't imagine. So because I'm never doubting anything. He has it. He's so together. You've been around me enough to see that I have all kinds of stuff going. I get upset and I get irritated with things and I doubt things and wonder about things. Wouldn't you say?
The difference.
For doing what? Bye
bye.
I have students and you don't. I stole that from. What did I steal that from?
Suzuki
Roshi. Great answer. Anything else? Okay, dedicate them.
We also have donation boxes out in the hallway and online. We welcome and encourage your help financially.
May fear and this penetrate into all places so that we and every sentient being together can realize the Buddha's way. Ji Ho San Ji Ji. The 10 directions, the 3 worlds, all Buddhas, all venerable ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, the great Prajna, Paramita.